Robert Earl Keen, well known for all the great music he's done over the years, started out in bluegrass. Made a song about it called Bluegrass Widow. Only recorded it, only played it once, 1988, a live recording. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But Robert has a new album out called Happy Prisoner. And what it really means is that he's happy to be still beholding and a prisoner to that great bluegrass sound that he grew up loving. And it's a great album. We're going to talk in detail about that. Now we're up to the point where it's Robert Earl Keen Day. We're going to talk to Robert Earl Keen about his brand new album, Happy Prisoner, his experiences in bluegrass, how he got to where he's circled back around that big circle of life, come back to make a great album entitled Happy Prisoner. It's all bluegrass. So stay tuned right now. Robert Earl Keen coming up for your enjoyment. I was going to say dancing enjoyment. Check out a dance. Let's go dance afterwards. But just sit down and listen. Robert Earl Keen will give you some interesting stuff about his new album and his passion. He's a prisoner. He's a happy prisoner of bluegrass. I'm very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass today, Robert Earl Keen. How you doing, Robert?
Doing very well, Steve. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, listen, I know you're busy, and if anyone doubts me, go to your website. You are a touring. You're a touring man. You're a touring musician. It never stops.
It never stops. We have a big year going this year. This is a big year.
Well, and you've done it. Not only thank you for being on the show, but also thank you for doing a great bluegrass album. I know your bluegrass connections from way back, but Happy Prisoner of the Bluegrass Sessions. This is a great, I mean, the bluegrass people have to be thrilled when someone like Robert Earl Keen will come back and remember the roots and all your early connections to bluegrass and put out not just a let's do a bluegrass album, but a great bluegrass album with different interpretations of classic songs. And it's a lot of fun. It's a great, well played, and you have great musicians all over the place.
Well, I was part of it. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be surrounded by great musicians in my band. My band and I have been together for 20 years, and they're the core part of this particular project. But also, you know, I've been a longtime friend with Danny Barnes, who played the banjo and sang a lot all over the records, and same with Sarah Watkins, who played the fiddle. So I've been really lucky to have these people around me. Kim Warner from the Green Cards.
Green Cards, yeah.
And, it's been, so when we got to sitting down and just doing real bluegrass that everybody knew, not only was it fun and exciting, but it was, you know, I think really relaxing, particularly for the people that, you know, grew up like I did listening to bluegrass. They were kind of happy to go back to, you know, some strong traditional stuff.
Well, and Danny Barnes, to me, I immediately think of the Bad Livers.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And I've finagled trying to get Danny to sit down long enough to be on the show, and it'll happen someday. It just takes a while. Kim Warner has been on the show from the Green Cards, and he just did an instrumental album. Great mandolin player, Australian bluegrass.
Yeah, fantastic player,
yeah.
Unbelievable.
And Sarah Watkins, of course, if I mention Nickel Creek, everybody knows her, but she's done so many things since and in between those get-togethers. She's just a wonderful singer and a great talent. And Dennis Ludeker, you got one of the fiddling Ludekers on this album.
Uh-huh, we sure do. That was a really cool thing. Especially in the world of Dennis is a contest-winning fiddler, and I really truly started playing behind a contest fiddler guy. Just was patient enough with me to teach me how to do all these sort of alternating bass things on the guitar. It's really it not only gave me a chance to really learn how to play, but it also kind of forged my style.
And I want to give credit to Dennis, who's in a band that I've seen live, Milk Drive, which is an amazing, oh man, what a great, that's a band that's just waiting for someone to say, this is one of the greatest bands live in bluegrass scene right now, and it'll happen. Well, let's talk about this then. Happy Prisoner of the Bluegrass Sessions is, by the way, there's a lot of energy. This is a high energy, even though you have all these great, you've recollected all these great tunes. When I listen to it, and I understand the feeling that you're trying to put, but as a matter of fact, there's a lot of energy that comes through, even on these slower, more traditional. Is that a fair assessment, that it's just there's a high energy sound? I don't mean just because everyone's playing an electrical instrument or some other bit, or maybe some more percussive sound. This is a high level of energy. It's the only way I can describe it. And I try to think of a way to put it to you. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely. And I believe that the most energy comes from just we had a great time. We had, when you go in, I think this is my 18th album, and some of them have been live, but I've been in the studio mixing the live album. So I've experienced the studio experience at least 18 times, not counting all the demos I've made over the years. So, you know, there are experiences in the studio where it's not all that fun. It's tedious, and people are on the edge of their seat. There's all kinds of, you know, potential problems, and sometimes it's just not fun. Most of the time, it's just kind of in the middle. This one was way on the side of being really fun. I mean, everybody, when we finish a song, you know, everybody would be laughing, and you know, if you started another one, they'd be going, yeah, sure, we can do that again, not a problem. And it was just really great. So I believe the energy just came from the general attitude of the entire room when we made the record.
Well, good. I'm glad I didn't make that up, because I listen in the car, I'm thinking, am I picking up this tone correctly? And of course, I mean, people that have seen you and of the 18 studio, and you have done live albums too in live, they know that there's a lot of energy in what you perform. But I just thought, and so you did this then sort of as a, I mean, you have to be some recording instruments, but you did this sort of as a group session as much as you were able to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not only a longtime bluegrass fan, but I'm somewhat a purist, and I really wanted everybody to be playing and playing together. And that's one of the greatest things about bluegrass music is you not only hear the music when you play it, but you feel it. And I wanted to feel it, you know. So we did everything has overdubs here and there, but the fact is what we were getting was like full blown live tracks on everything, and it just went really well, and it was, you know, some of it was even on the edge of your seat. For instance, we did that Richard Thompson song,
yes,
Vince of Black Lightning, and on that one, we kind of practiced it a few times, and we didn't really have an ending, and we just kind of just kept going. It's like, okay, stop, and then it stopped. It was perfect. Okay, that works.
And what you're mentioning about this live, this really live feel about bluegrass, is when you're sitting around playing, you're looking at each other, and you're kind of taking, you know, that same kind of feeling, because you're sitting with people who can, if you want to extend it out, if you have an idea, you can. You don't want to do it forever, but you're actually sitting and looking around at each other, and everybody's into that, right in that that groove or that pocket of what you're doing. And when you surround yourself with these kind of people that you have on the album, you can just kind of like, you know, you can play around with it, and you still want to be tight on it, but you can still extend it a little bit.
Yeah, I think Danny Barnes says it best. He says, "Oh man, he just float." I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "You just get in there and float. You just play. It happens." I know that, you know, Danny's such an incredible musician.
Oh, yes.
That he might take that for granted a little bit. But but I will have to say, I know exactly what he's talking about.
You know, it's funny. You do this. And you have all these great, I mean, golly, Walls of Time and Tea for Texas and Long Black Veil. And all these great, great traditional bluegrass tunes that were probably... well, certainly they were around when you were doing bluegrass. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, many, many years ago. But Vincent Black Lightning is, of course, a Richard Thompson tune. But Del McCoury has made that an instant old classic, and don't you think?
Sure, yeah.
And you kind of combine that energy that, you know, Richard is very energetic live and really puts a lot of... Yeah, so you put... I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You put that energy with Del's version that makes it more bluegrass, but it's still your own version. It's a very high energy, high-octane version of it.
Yeah, it's just... And, you know, the lyric, even though it's really about a motorcycle, but the lyric is just so... I have, you know, hats off to Del for really... you know, including this in the bluegrass, American bluegrass songbook, because it really is a bluegrass song, and lyrically for sure, and the whole, you know, the effort behind it and the energy behind it and the story, it's just beautiful. And so, fortunately for me, one of the things why I decided to go ahead and do this song, and knowing that, you know, Del really did this sort of quintessential version, was because as much as I've played with Del over the years, I never really heard his version. So when I thought about it, I thought, well, that's a great idea, so I'll do this. And I knew Richard's version, so we just sort of made up our own version based on that. So it was really fun.
Good. Well, you know, and the thing about Del's version, I play a little bit banjo that has the, if you heard it since you recorded this, have you heard Dell's version since?
No, I haven't.
All right. The greatest kickoff, the most distinctive banjo notes. It's not fast, it's not Foggy Mountain Breakdown, but what Rob does on kicking off, as soon as you hear the first three notes, it's instantly, then, oh, it's great. You got to listen to just for that alone. Then, of course, listen to the rest of it. Your version of Footprints in the Snow, I will tell you this, and everybody's done that since Bill Monroe, and you do it great. There's a little more urgency in your search in the snow. I don't know why I picked that up. You almost seem instantly happier, whereas the other ones...
Therein lies like the answer to actually the title of this record, Happy Prisoner. There's this huge dichotomy between the happiness of that music, which always makes it, you know, who's not happy when they hear a banjo? Yeah. And then the tragedy around the lyric almost. And there's just so much of that, you know, going on through bluegrass where you've got this happy sound, but oh my God, it's really, really sad, tragic story behind it. So on that one, you know, what I think of Footprints in the Snow really is as a great, great performance piece. Kind of really highlighting that fiddle part, you know. I love how Sarah kicked that off and just got it going, and you know, and also, you know, I think as far as like just the energy, like you point out too, it's really about you know, there's a certain longing in that energy, so that's where we were coming from.
Yeah, it's not just that someone's been rescued in the snow. There's a guy that's happy that he followed the footprints. I mean, when you take it where you want, you know.
Absolutely.
It's sometimes it gets lonely up in the mountains. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Peter Rowan. Had you performed or recorded with Peter before? Because I want to ask you a question about that.
Oh my God! I'll tell you a secret I've never told anybody before.
Good.
Ever. But when I was living in Austin, Texas, back in the '80s, I played everything from a hot dog stand to a gas station. Even one of my first gigs was a big joke for me, but it was a garage sale. But I wanted to play in the real clubs. So there was a real club called Imagos. It was a music club. It was run by a guy named Martin Wigington, and they had, you know, every week they'd have somebody, you know, just really famous, and you know, particularly in the folk and the singer songwriter world, and you know, you'd see their name up there, and I just wanted my name up there. I didn't want just my name up there. I just wanted to be part of it. So I would just beg. I'd go there on a weekly basis and ask Martin, "Can I play? Can I play?" No. And finally, one day I walk in there, just, you know, kind of thinking, well, he's going to turn me down again, and he says, I've got a choice for you. You can open for one of two of these people. I said, really? He goes, yeah, you can open for Townes Van Zandt or Peter Rowan. I said, Peter Rowan.
Oh, boy.
And I love Townes, right?
Oh, sure.
I just had never met Peter. I just, you know, I was really, you know, a big fan. And then, you know, a few years later, Peter and I used to tour together as a solo act. He would play and I'd play. I'd open for him, but up in New England and even over in California. So I've known Peter for many, many years. He even lived in Nashville. He lived around the corner from me. We used to hitchhike to play tennis together, and the only thing bluegrass about that was we were hitchhiking.
And nobody died.
And nobody died.
you know, I love the fact that you do this little question and to Peter about the Walls of Time and how that tune came about. Those things, to me, if you can find those little nuggets and just great music, but the fact that you had a chance, because Peter is really one of the last, well, there's a lot of people that, of course, play with Bill Monroe, but he's talking about a touchstone to connect with Bill Monroe and that whole bluegrass boy thing. Boy, Peter's certainly got full of those memories.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a treasure chest for that stuff. And I think one of the reasons, Steve, is because Peter is still, to this day, a huge fan of Bill Monroe. Not only was he a colleague and a player for him, but he's still a fan. So he has that great objectivity that he can sit back and say, you know, this is what's great about Bill Monroe, and this is where I got to experience it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm just glad you put that in there, because I thought, yeah, man, if you get a chance to get Peter talking on a record about bluegrass, it's just a nice little thing to throw in. It was a great intro to Walls of Time. You also do Old Home Place, which, you know, all the bluegrass people, they almost almost think JD, which is great, JD Crow New South. It's an old Dillard's. It's an old Dillard's tune. And
from the Dillard's.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
Miss Jane, you know.
Yeah, sure. I thought I was going to ask you is what's your because if you think about it, it has nothing to do with Kentucky or the hills on the other side of the Mississippi River that they're talking
about.
And you do a great job on that.
And it's one of those ones that you know, people really pay attention to. I like to play that song just for people that have no idea about bluegrass at all, because it really has a great melody line. It's got, you know, the kind of the standard bluegrass story to it, but it really kicks, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. And you kick off, the whole album kicks off, speaking of kicking, with one of the absolute, you know, if you're going to do a bluegrass album and you want to be this hot corn, cold corn, and your version is so different. It's almost dark. I mean, it's almost a dark, you know what I'm saying? It's just sort of like, wow, is this Tom Waits? Is this Tom Waits or Robert Earl Keane?
There's definitely going on. There's the Tom Waits stuff going on there for sure.
Oh, that's good. It's good. Let me ask you this too, because you have such a big following wherever you go. And I know your live shows are just greatly attended and very audience participation. You do great. How are they taken? You're doing the bluegrass. And I know you're doing venues with, you know, this is like with the bluegrass band, but you're going to have crossover. How's your audience from the last 18 years doing with the bluegrass sound?
Well, let me say, this is an interesting question, Steve, because I've made lots of records. I don't generally just jump in and follow those records up. I just sort of incorporate a few of the songs, the new songs, you know, and play it like, you know, I change the set every night. So hit some high spots, hit some stuff people don't know at all. And on this one, I really felt compelled to get out there and play this in a bluegrass style and play these deals. So we have been playing, I'd say, the majority of the shows since February in a bluegrass style, where we have, you know, either Danny Barnes comes out or have Wes Corbett come out.
Oh, yeah, sure. And Joy Kills Sorrow is the band I connect Wes with.
Huh?
Joy Kills Sorrow is the band that
yes,
I connect
yes,
with.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's who we played with.
Yeah.
He lives up in, he teaches at Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And great guy, man. It turned out that I didn't even know him. I just called him up. So he played. He's a great player. And Kim. Anyway, so I bring all these guys out. Of course, like I said before, we have the core band. So all the core band can really play this. You know, Rich just plays a, you know, flat top guitar and some mandolin. And then Marty plays a dobro. And Bill plays an upright bass. And we got this all going. And the singing's good and stuff like that. But we needed, you know, some auxiliary players, you know, some people that play. So I've been kind of switching that out. And, you know, but anyway, that being said, we've been playing mostly songs these shows in a bluegrass style, and what we do is we incorporate some of my old songs and we just work them up into bluegrass sound of tune. So,
yeah. So
if you want to hear, you know, if you want to hear Footprints in the Snow, then you might get to hear Road Goes On Forever in the same.
Well, yeah,
style.
Sure. The you know, this and when I was setting this up, and I was getting through to your to Lori to try to get this set up. One of my things I said, look, I've done this show for couple of years, not that long, but I'm having a good time doing it. But every month or so, every four, I'll play Bluegrass Widow on the air.
Yes.
And I said, that ought to be enough to get Robert to call me back, because I love that six minutes and 21 seconds or what of Bluegrass Widow, which I think is for, I've actually had your banjo player from that band has contacted me through social media or Facebook, and that's exactly how it happened, in more or less a more condensed term. But Bluegrass Widow is back from that. It was only done live, right, in 88?
Yeah, that's it.
And it's the story of the front porch bluegrass thing. The front porch boys, you got to be boys, that's right.
Yeah.
And it's a great little story about how immersed you were in bluegrass. And And unfortunately,
we're taking bluegrass to where it's never been before. We're not taking you.
And we're not taking you. And that so often happens in those small bands. You have the PA system.
Yeah, I know. Got a lot of mileage out of that.
Oh, it's great. It's a great intro to. Would you do that? Now would you do that live?
I have not done that, Steve. That's a good question.
Oh, you're right.
I really haven't done that. And I do get a lot of requests for that song, but I truly, you know, played it years ago and sort of was riffing on that whole story and just pretty much never repeated. So I get a lot of people asking. I get some people actually pretty demanding about it. I don't know if we should even be talking about it.
Okay, then.
I can see the future.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. No, it's good. I like it. It's fun. I had a great time, and I love that story, and it's all true, too.
Comes across that way. On the album, you have, if you're just tuning in, I'm so happy to be talking to Robert Earl Keane about his new bluegrass album, Happy Prisoner, the Bluegrass Sessions. You have Lyle Lovett, which is always a good thing.
Yes, I know. Lyle, it's really fantastic. So he's, you know, like my, you know, friend forever. Like Lyle says, we're real friends, not showbiz friends. And we put that song, that's a Jimmy Rogers song. Jimmy Rogers, the father of country music. And one of the reasons I did that song was because not only did I know it was a big fan of Jimmy Rogers, but I live in Kerrville, Texas, which is the very last home of Jimmy Rogers.
Okay.
So we put that on the, you know, we were putting that on the record or planning to put it on, and I called Lyle up and said, because I'm like a fourth generation Texan, Lyle's like sixth generation Texan. And I said, man, you ought to do you ought to do this, you know, and so.
And when we're talking about T for Texas.
And so, yeah, T for Texas. Mm-hmm. So he said, yeah, when and where? So he, you know, he came over the next day and we cut it.
You do, and it's great. I'm just the whole Texas. And if you did, you change up a few words in there somewhere.
I can't recall.
Seems like there might be a twist.
I say this West Virginia water tastes like turpentine.
Thank you.
It's kind of a reference to what happened in West Virginia like a year and a half ago.
I got you. That's what I thought. I thought that's what I heard. And then Natalie Maines is on the album, which people will recognize her. But before we talk about Wayfaring Strangers, which is just a devastating use of her voice and everything, you played with her father, correct?
Yes, I did. Forever. Lloyd, years ago, when Lloyd lived in Lubbock, and we used to play in Lubbock, and that was one of those first places where we kind of caught on fire with a lot of college kids. I mean, we'd fill this place up as, like, I don't know, 2,200 people. And when they'd leave, they'd be a sea of beer bottles. I mean, you could not walk through there because there's so many beer bottles laying on the ground. And Lloyd used to come out and play with us at these crazy, crazy gigs because he just, you know, we met somehow. I met through Joe Ely, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And he started playing with it. And one day we were sound checking there at this place. It's called the Depot. And Lloyd says, have you ever heard my little girl sing? It's a little girl, right?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. He goes, well, she's only 14 years old. I said, really? He goes, she sings her ass off. It's me. True words are never spoken. Is amazing. And then, you know, I got to know Natalie and all the Dixie Chicks, but I've known Natalie for the longest. And so when I was doing Wayfaring Stranger, I told Lloyd, I said, man, I need something, you know, to soften this up. I need an angelic voice. I need, like, a girl's voice here. He said, well, why don't you ask Natalie? I said, ah, Natalie's too busy. He goes, oh, no, she cut her teeth on this stuff. I said, okay. So I called her up. Same deal. Like, wow, man, when and where?
That's great, and it's a great cut. I mean, if you pick up the album, Happy Prisoners, like I said, all these tunes, you're going to say, well, I've heard these versions. I've heard this song before, but these are all your versions, your interpretation, and it has this live energy and everything going on. And I don't want anyone to think that they're just picking up a collection of. I mean, these are reinterpreted, and all the things we're talking about, and all the guests and all the musicians, and I don't want to leave out the regular band members who we've mentioned, you know, Dennis and Sarah and Danny Barnes, who you've known forever, I bet you. But I don't want to leave out anybody else. But the album is just great. It's great. I hate to say reinterpret. I mean, but you're doing songs the way you want to do them in that bluegrass feel with the voice that got you kicked out of, you know, of the front porch.
Right. Well, I mean, that was one of the reasons that I kind of stayed apart from it. I just got to where, you know, Steve, I really wanted to do it, and I didn't really care if it, you know, worked or didn't work. I just really wanted to do it. I love these songs. I love that it shaped a lot of the way I play and I think and how I write songs. And I just felt like, you know, I think you ought to always give back, or you ought to always give credit where credit's due, you know. And I just, that was basically just what I was doing with bluegrass music, because I just had such a great love for it.
That's great. Well, we're all happy that you're, let me ask you this. I was going to say we're all happy that you've done this, because it boosts, I think it boosts, I'm not trying to put a lot on you, but I think it does kind of boost the awareness of bluegrass. And you know, and so that, which is a good thing, you know, you raise the water level and
absolutely
all that, where that goes. But so many albums that have come out that are maybe not people would recognize right away as a bluegrass artist have been coming out. Now, I knew your connection, and many people did, is bluegrass becoming mildly cool? I mean, you see on stage, you see banjos. They might be six string, but the audience may not get it. You see mandolin. I mean, do you think there's a with all the other pop influence in country, we'll say country music. Is bluegrass kind of reappearing, or at least not so scary?
You know, certainly influences of bluegrass are reappearing, you know, all over the place. You see that everywhere, which is really cool. I also think that there's kind of a resurgence in what I would say in a broader spectrum of string band music.
That's good.
And, you know, with, you know, supported by, you know, modern day, you know, technology as far as percussion goes and things like that. But the sounds, the singing part and stuff like that, very much a part of bluegrass and string band music. And, you know, I love it personally because I think that truly that is, there is an Americana form, or there's an American form of music other than jazz.
Mm-hmm.
It would be bluegrass. And I just, you know, I think that we should always be aware of what we're doing. And we need to be aware of what we're doing to know where we're going. So I wanted to, you know, be part of that thing. And I loved it. And I just think that it's the most communal form of music that I know.
You know, it's funny, too, and this is one more point I'll delve off of. And then, you know, you mentioned Wes Corbett. And
uh-huh.
You know, Wes teaches at Berkeley. There is now a whole flock of musicians that have been taken to Berkeley who have Chris Pandolfi of the String Dusters has a degree in banjo from Berkeley. Now,
uh-huh.
So now you have all these other, not that they're trying to get away from the original sounds, but now you have them that have been channeled through that type of education and learning, whereas before it might have been you literally learn on your front or back porch or
sure,
in someone's
right.
home. So now that whole influence is coming back down through again, which I think is going to help. I don't want to say modernize, but you know, give a new voice to what is still that great bluegrass Americana sound.
Yeah, no, you know, anything that points toward bluegrass, I'm happy about.
Well, good. Well, I'm happy you're happy, and I'm happy you're a happy prisoner.
Good deal.
I'm figuring you're still a happy prisoner of the whole bluegrass sound. Maybe that's what you're the prisoner of.
Absolutely.
All right, man, this is great, Robert Joaquin. Now, if people want to follow you, you have a website. You're very busy. That's why I'm so thrilled you took this time. But if you check up Robert Joaquin's website, the new album is on Dual Tone, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Dual Tone's a great label, too.
I want
to say that.
Great picture on the back. I was going to ask you, sometimes I get into these things too much, but you're not on the back of the album, but where did the photograph on the back come from?
Lloyd Maines' family. That's in Lubbock. You don't see the whole picture because it didn't kind of work as far as, I mean, the picture works great as it is, but the entire picture, what I love about this is, you know, bluegrass is totally associated with Appalachia and the hills and the hollers and, you know, deep down in the gorge and all that sort of stuff, way back in the trees and stuff like that. These are people in Lubbock, Texas in 1916. So if you blew out the picture bigger, all you would see was that shack behind them and no trees. No hills, no nothing. I mean,
just flat
food surface, right? So I just kind of got a huge kick out of that picture. Also, it's funny, there's three men and a woman. I mean, three women and one
right,
man.
Right.
And the man's playing the fiddle. And so Lloyd told me that all those old ladies, all those aunts and uncles used to say, those women were really good players, but that old man, all he did was just hold the fiddle one more band.
There you go. That's great. That's a perfect reverse on what we normally hear. So that's great. Listen,
yeah.
And I didn't want to let you go without the regular members of your band that appear on this album. Go through those if you could. We mentioned
what?
The rest of the members of your band. We've talked about them a little bit.
Wait a minute, Matt. Well, you know, we've been together 20 years, touring band. Bill Whitbeck plays upright bass. Rich Brotherton plays the guitars and the mandolin. Sometimes both of them sing harmony with me, and then I have Tom Van Skyke plays the drums with me on the bluegrass stuff. He plays some percussion and sings a lot. And then Marty Muse plays the steel guitar, and he plays on this bluegrass stuff. He plays the dobro on it. So, you know, like I say, our core band is out there doing this stuff all the time. And then when we get some other players, we have kind of a bigger sound. It's pretty damn good. I have to say, it's really cool. We did one at the Old Settlers Festival right outside of Austin, Texas, the other day, where we had Kim Warner and Danny Barnes and Brian Bacon play the fiddle all together with our band. So it was like eight of us on stage. It was fantastic.
And you're doing, I run through your list this morning. You're doing Bluegrass Festival. Well, I guess Telluride is still essentially one, if Sam has any word about it. But you're not just doing venues. You're kind of hitting some bigger festivals that might be more connected with bluegrass. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we did the Merle Fest. We did the Merle Fest. We did this Old Settlers Fest. We're going to do Telluride Bluegrass Festival. We're going to do the Ryman in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's right.
Bluegrass Thursdays in July. I think it's July the 23rd. Also playing Red Rocks with Lyle Lovett at the end of July. And then in October, we're going to be playing the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival, which is like our 10th year to play that.
Yeah.
In San Francisco out in Golden Gate Park.
Yeah. Well, it's great. I mean, it sounds like you're having fun doing this, and I think you have fun anyway when you're performing, but this album, I think, is just really, really giving you a chance to go back and revisit that type of music, and I think it comes through really, really loud and clear, Robert. I think it really...
Thanks so much, man.
It just jumps
off. I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, listen, Robert Earl Keen, thanks so much, man, for visiting what I call Unreal Bluegrass for reasons I could describe, but it's been a blast, man. I hope best of luck. And happy Prisoner.
Thanks, Steve Martin. I really appreciate it. I love your show, Unreal Bluegrass.
Okay. Thanks, Robert. Get back to whatever you're doing out in Texas. And our path.
Okay.
All right. We'll connect again at some point.
All right.
Thanks so much, Robert, for dropping by to enlighten us all about your new CD, Happy Prisoner, the Bluegrass Sessions. Great album, and just a wonderful time chatting with Robert Earl Keen. Great showman, great writer, great performer, great singer, and just fun. It was nice for people like that to take their time, someone that out there that busy, take their time to come in and chat, and no time limits. We just kind of ended it when we did. I think it was logical when we did. You're listening to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass.